My name's Joe Bear. I'm an alcoholic. Hey guys, wow, this is a treat, but I'm a bit nervous. So just bear with me. You know, I'm in front of a lot of guys that I grew up with. I grew up and they were already grown up. And you know, for many years I just did the detox retox, you know, the in and out thing. And my street of choice was Broward Boulevard, so take that for what it's worth, Troll Avenue. So I didn't think about anything before I got here about what I was going to say. That is puts a nail in the coffin for me. And all I asked God was to let me speak from my heart. Let me give you the truth. Let me give you my heart. And so for 16 years, I was homeless on Broward Boulevard. Paul remembers. I met Paul at the Express Group, I don't know how many years, 3 decades ago probably. And, you know, I noticed something distinctly different about certain individuals in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was staying at the House of Hope at the time, so, you know, it was easy to draw a distinction between the guys I was living with in the House of Hope versus the guys that were out there in AA, right, in the fellowship. And but there was also a distinction in the language and the message. And, you know, I, for a lot of years, I grew up in complete delusion. I had no idea. John Williams was my sponsor when I got here. He's passed now, but, you know, the first thing he said to me when I came over from Clearwater after another failed relationship, on my ass with nothing. He said, Joe, he says, the way you think it is just isn't the way it is. And I got really confused by that. I said, what the hell are you talking about? You know, I can see the same things you see. I hear the same things you hear. But I couldn't. I was living in an alternate reality. I was really stuck on and entrenched in the lie. And the bottom line was I didn't want to change. So I don't know if there's anybody that came to the retreat this weekend that brought somebody new. Is that a possibility or not? Yeah? Fantastic. Pat is my sponsor now. I thought John did this just to get us together. But no, I came in broken in a million pieces. And it wasn't the first time I was broken in a million pieces. But it was clear to me at that time that, I didn't have any more ideas on how to get me where I wanted to go. And, some of the things that John told me when I in my first couple months, he says, in the realm of relationships, in the realm of success, family, intimacy, vulnerability, anything for that matter, he said, it's what you know that's killing you. It's what you know that's actually what he described was I was fighting for the right to die. If that makes any sense to you. And I wouldn't listen to reason. I wouldn't listen to anybody that had any valuable information. So I had done for decades, for almost 2 decades, the not drink, go to meeting thing. That's all I wanted to do. It's not like I wasn't, you know, introduced to the steps and saw them on the window shades and, you know, thought that was like incredibly simple for a very screwed up guy, that it couldn't be that simple. And you know how it goes, you know, we just keep hitting the wall. And my family went by the wayside. I got kicked out of West Palm Beach. I was born and raised there. And then they sent me down to Fort Lauderdale. And they let me out like at 10 o'clock at night, back in the hood. I said, go, get out. We don't want to see you anymore. And then I got really bad down there in Fort Lauderdale. And then they sent me to Texas. You know, they were constantly pushing me further and further away. So I had really gotten to the point where I had become the lone wolf. You know, that I had become that guy that had absolutely nobody to depend on, nobody to rely on, and that was terrifying to me. And living on the street is not easy. I'm college educated. I mean, I got a great family. My family is not the problem. They never were the problem. The problem's always been staring back at me in the mirror. And, you know, I got, so when I came, when I got with John, you know, he started to give me directions. You know, he was the kind of guy that got in my face. It's kind of like, you know, like Father, like son, right? He got in my face and he just told me some really brutal stuff about me. You know, he says, first thing, I mean, the first time I met with him, he says, do me a favor, take all the money you got in this world out of your pocket and show me what you got. I had 77 cents. He says, Joe Barry says, that's exactly what you're committed to having. Not a penny more. He says, you've been breaking promises all your life. You have no integrity. You can't keep your word. You don't even have a word. Nobody can depend on you. Nobody can rely on you. You're a filth, you know, you're a habitual liar. I mean, he's telling me things that I obviously know, but I want to say, no, you don't understand. It's like, all my life, I was always the guy that was like that manipulator, that imposter, that masquerader, that I actually was always gaming. I was always this guy that had motive. And listen, the world was my oyster. I mean, the world, as far as I was concerned, had everything that I needed to be successful, happy, useful. The world was it. You know, I never considered taking a vertical path. And it all but cut me to pieces. We know how that goes. So eventually here, I'm going to settle down and we'll just like get into this thing. So anyway, I'm gonna tell you how I got introduced to John Williams. And in case you don't know who he is, he was part of the Big Book Seminars with Joe and Charlie and Willie B. And they went all over the place. Pat and Brian are doing it now. And that's where I learned the fundamentals. That's where I was able to actually build a foundation in recovery. And I had no idea that the recovery program was in the book. I used to think that, you know, the book was for old people. You know what I mean? And now I'm an old person. But the very first assignment, he gave me assignments. It's not like, you know, he says, well, don't worry about it. Well, you know, just hang out for a little while, get yourself a job, feel a little better, get acclimated to the house. No, he didn't do that at all. He says, the first thing you're going to do is read that doctor's opinion. And when you're done, you're going to let me know when you're done. We're going to sit down and we're going to cover the material. That was exactly what I needed. Because if anybody told me to do anything, I just didn't do it. So, and for the first time after two decades, I learned the death sentence. I learned what was killing me. You know, it wasn't a matter of stopping. Shit, I stopped 1,000 times. John, you say you want to stop? Slap a cop. You stop. Your problem is not stopping, Joe. Your problem is that you can't stop starting. And that had an impact on me. When I first met John Williams, it was in the late 90s. And I was living at the House of Hope. I don't know, one of the tours I was there. I think I was there about four times. Anything to get off the street and get a shower and a meal. Anything. Salvation Army, the mission, back when that was going on. And so we became friends in the House of Hope. I mean, I was a preppy asshole, and this guy was a hippie. You know, one of the long-haired, just vinegar and oil. I had those judgments going on. But we became friends, and he said, Joe, I could go into a meeting. I think you'd find really valuable. I said, really? I said, what kind of meeting is it? He says, a big book study. I said, a big book study? I said, did any women go there? You know what I mean? That's where I was parked. You know, we all come in here with these old attitudes, ideas, and beliefs, these fixed ideas about the way we think it should be. And I was so hardwired to that. But I went. And when we got to the parking lot, when we pulled in, there weren't that many people hanging out. But I kind of ventured up to the meeting hall in the church. And I hear a bunch of music. I hear some, you know, dance music. Loud. And I pop my head in the door and I see John. I didn't know who he was at the time, but he was up at the front of the stage. And he was just dancing his ass off. Having the best time ever. With the lavalier on his head. And he was just getting it. I mean, he all by himself. And I'm going to tell you something, guys. That had an unbelievable impact on me. Because I had been such a fraud and such a phony. Broken in a million pieces. Dying on the inside. Pretending everybody else wasn't going on. Right? And here's this guy up in the front. Dancing his fool head off. Not giving a damn what people think about him. I was consumed with what people thought about me. I was consumed with what you were thinking about me, how you were judging me, what you were saying about me. And I mean, you had the power to actually kill. I mean, you had the power to make me feel like I'm nothing or something. Because I'm going to tell you what, in the last few years, I felt like such a zero on the inside. And like a nobody. And I really had come to grips with that. I had not made one contribution to mankind. I had not contributed to anybody's life in a positive way. That's a fact. I was a gamer. I was a cheat. I was a manipulator. And I was a liar. I was a habitual liar. I didn't even know how to tell the truth. You could have given me $20 to tell the truth and $5 to lie, and I would have taken the $5. I'm not kidding you. Because it was all part of the act. You know, the book talks about that and how it works. It says, you know, what's the one thing that can derail us when we make this decision to turn our will, our thoughts, and our life, our actions, over to the care of God as we understood Him? The one thing that's going to take me down is that idiot looking in the mirror at me. John said when I first got here that you need to go into that bathroom and look in that mirror and fire that asshole that's looking back at you because he sucks at running your life. I mean, how do you respond to that? But I needed to hear that. I needed that forceful, I needed somebody to put my stuff on display. And he did. He could read right through me. So, I had not been a genuine person all my life. And that's frightening because you're always having to perform. You're always having to, you know, I was brought up in a family that loved God, involved in a religion, and they told me what I was, and I didn't argue. I thought that I was born that way. Just like I was a guy. I was born that religion. Like, somehow that was part of the gene pool. So I never denied it. I never spoke badly about it. I wouldn't do that to my family. But I'd gone to Sunday school. I was taught about God. I had learned a lot about God. I just never knew God. I never knew Him. I never sought a relationship with them. How do you do that when, you know, all conventional wisdom says it's only what you can see, hear, feel, taste, and touch, right? I mean, I was a thief. I mean, how am I going to wait on God? I want that bike now. And I go steal it. And so I had become whoever you needed me to be so that I could gain and get what it is I wanted from you. And I was at a crossroads. But John didn't elaborate on that. He didn't dwell on that. He says, read that doctor's opinion, then we're going to talk. I mean, that was it. So I read the doctor's opinion, and I find out I got a death sentence. I can't stop when I start. And worse, I can't stop starting. And something goes on in my mind. Pat calls it a black curtain, where I can only remember what booze did for me. When I was hurting people and I was stealing from people and I was manipulating people and I was disappearing and just, you know, inflicting a lot of harm on my family. My mother, God bless her, she was just one of my biggest champions, and I just continually shit all over her. And when you do stuff like that, I have found out through this program, working those steps, that when we do those things to people, we lie, we cheat, we're inconsiderate, we're selfish, we're self-centered, we're greedy, we're lustful, all those things. Those things, when we do those things to people, there are consequences from that behavior. And I didn't realize it, but I was starting to develop this internal condition. You know, I was starting to develop this regret and this shame and remorse and bitterness and feeling like a loser and feeling like a failure. I felt that way because I was. Every time I come into AA, I build up the hopes and then just spit in their face. Tear it down. You know, listen, people can say, you know, you're an alcoholic and, you know, that's what the disease... No, bullshit. That was my character. Booze had become my solution to numb that out. You know, when you're walking around and you're dying on the inside and you're pretending to everybody else that internal condition doesn't exist, people do it in AA. I did it in AA. I didn't want people to dislike me or think, you know, bad thoughts about me. I wanted them to think I was successful and witty and smart and, you know, had it together. And so I was just that consummate actor. And anyway, so now we're faced with death. And then the next chapter is Bill's story, and then we read there's a solution, and it's the need for power. And I had never considered ever to venture outside the things that my family had taught me, the religion that I had grown up in. I thought that would be the ultimate mortal sin, and it would kill my mother. But in the book it says reconsider or die. In the 12 and 12 it says reconsider or die. And if it says faced with alcoholic destruction, right, we soon become open-minded and willing. And the one thing booze and drugs had to do for me was it had to beat me into a place of teachability, because nobody could teach me nothing. I was stuck. So John was a master at being able to identify stuff without even knowing me. You know what I mean? We can do that as alcoholics. We know all those things on the inside. We may have been other places and different scenery and different states and what have you, but we all suffered the same stuff on the inside. We all know that regret, that shame, that remorse, the fear. We know that stuff. And so when I got to, when I understood the power thing, I just didn't know how I was going to approach that, because I had tried it in the past to go back and recapture what I had been taught in religion. To go back and go to church and, you know, say confession. My dad on his deathbed, get back to confession, get back to your faith. Well, I thought faith and religion meant the same thing. I didn't know they were different. Right? So, John was pretty gentle with me with that stuff. And he says, look, AA's got the formula. To where you don't have to, I mean, you can go to church if you want to, Joe, but you don't have to go to church. You don't have to genuflect. You don't have to say to her, listen, all you need to do is understand that you're dying from alcoholism and that there's a solution of power, God's power, and you're going to make a decision to seek that power. And then you're going to follow the rest of the recipe to have that awakening, that transformation, that caterpillar to the butterfly thing. I said, okay. I mean, I was fully reliant on him. I needed somebody to coach me and direct me and tell me what to do because I was scared to death to do anything other than what he told me to do. I was terrified. Like, do I look for a job today? Where should I look for that? I mean, I was like a child. And When we started to address step two is where I really found out that number one, I could break off from the traditional understanding I had of all the things that I did that I thought me and God were okay, like going to church, doing mechanics, the attendance, and all that stuff. Because I was dying. I mean, I was dying. I hated my guts when I got here. I hated my freaking guts. I couldn't even look in the mirror in my eyes because I just felt filthy in there. And one of the fears that I had prior to, and I told John this, I said, John, I don't think I'll ever be forgiven. My people will never forgive me. I can't forgive me. How are they supposed to forgive me? He says, well, let's just make that decision and see what happens next. So in We Agnostics, which I think is one of the most unbelievable chapters in the book, I was given the opportunity to look at my old attitudes, my old beliefs, and my, you know, my ideas, you know, about everything. And I came to understand that this thing is not as complicated as you would think. I mean, I made it out to be really complicated. I was an agnostic Catholic, is what I was. I was without knowledge. I had never pursued a relationship. So like I said, I was barren. The people that I held as God was you, right? And that takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work. And all that failed too. So when it got into We Agnostics and it talked about, listen, are you willing to believe? Do you believe, or are you at least willing to believe, that there's a power greater than yourself that can restore you? And it's not like I didn't believe, but I told John, I said, look, I just need to believe that a different relationship with God is possible, because the bottom line is whatever I come into AA with, no matter how profound I think it is, no matter if I can quote scripture and verse and, you know, act all holy and all that stuff, it's insufficient to overcome alcoholism. It's insufficient to stay stopped, right? Being a recovered alcoholic just simply means you're able to stay stopped, right? And it was my thinking that was killing me. And I got that. So I was able to make that declaration a page or two later where it said either God is going to be everything or he's going to be nothing. Because here's the bottom line. Everything that we do in AA and the 12 steps, at least this is my understanding, leads to a relationship with God that will solve all my problems. And it has. Right? It's been able to keep me stopped. It's been able to give me direction. It's been able to give me protection and counsel. And listen, this relationship I have today is real. Matter of fact, it's more real than any relationship I have on earth. God reveals himself to me because I have a heart to reveal myself to him. It's a two-way thing. But I had to, you know, either God is going to be everything or he's going to be nothing. So either he's going to be the only thing I'm trying to focus on, And if I do that, it's the same thing when you're working the steps, I believe. If the steps lead me to a relationship with God, then I can say that the steps, the spiritual awakening as a result of the steps, is the same thing as saying that the steps are going to be everything or they're going to be nothing. It's the same thing as saying God's going to be everything or it's going to be nothing. It's the same. It's like AKA, also known as, as far as I'm concerned. So I needed to, you know, and how it works, it you know, we put that keystone in place in the arch, and you know, it's time to put God in his rightful place in my life. I wanted him to coexist with all the other bullshit I was chasing out there. My instincts ran me, man. My instincts had me perpetrate and become a predator on people. Whatever I needed was in my instincts of character. And I was chasing it, and I never got enough. And I was never happy. I was never successful. I mean, I was so inconsistent. So it's like, what did I have to lose? John said, what do you have to lose? How well is what you've been doing working out, Joe? How do you answer that? Terrible. Horrible. And that, so, when we come to that paragraph on the bottom of that page, says God's going to be our director. He's the father, we're his children. He's the principal, we're his agent. I had to get out of the throne of running my life and put God in his rightful place. And that's at the top. And seek him with all my heart. When I make that decision, which I did, right? John says, listen, it says at the end of the third step prayer at the bottom of the page, it says next, right? We launched. That means set forth with velocity. I didn't know that. All I knew is that when John said, are you ready to do this thing? I said, yes, sir. He says, good, get a pencil, no eraser. And he put me right on a four step. It was boom, boom, boom until the end of the fifth step. The first little timeline, the first break we get. Listen, it was either me, I had tried this thing for two decades. Either it was going to be all or nothing for me at this point. If I had to live another day, and I've heard you say this many times, if I had to live another day in my skin, I was going to take myself out. I mean, I had to plan and everything. You know, it's a very dark place to get to get to hating your own guts, to feeling filthy about yourself. So, I did the four step, and you know, it's so well explained in the big book seminars, and you know, it's just passed down from generation to generation. But it makes it so easy. Because I had been to treatment. I heard about the life story. I heard about all that stuff. You know, you bury it on the beach or whatever. You send it out in a bottle. When I listed those resentments, that was easy. And then I did saying what they did to piss me off, that was easy too. And saying what they threatened was even easy as well. Because it allowed me to be the victim I always was. I came in here, John said, I had a V etched in my forehead, stood for victim. I had a victim story for everything. I blamed everything on everybody but myself. I never took accountability or responsibility for any of the things I had ever done. I always had a story to make sure that you understood why I did what I did was rational. Right? I had to give you the whole backdrop. And but then that fourth column came around. And things change. It says, and here's what I love about that in the book. It says, we're prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. It says, the fourth and the fifth, well, some people group them together, but we don't. What I did to set the ball rolling, you know, what could I have done different? That was a soul-searching thing. The defects were not that difficult for me. I was like all the above. I always think they should put that on the column, all the above. But So I went from being a victim to having an understanding that, oh my God, I wrote this whole script. I authored everything. Everything that happened in my life, mostly, right, except maybe as a child, right, was the consequence of my own behavior, the consequence of my own gaming and calculation. And when I saw that, I stopped asking why my life was so screwed up. I started saying, well, of course my life is screwed up. How could my life not be screwed up, given how I was showing up? And for the first time in my life, I got to see who you got when I showed up on the scene. And it sucked. But at least I felt relieved. Right? In the end of the four step, after you do the fears and the harms, we talk about the harms and you know, listen, I had some people on all the pages, but the harm was the harm, but the hurt was excruciating. You know, when you go into the exact nature and you look at what you did to people to just steal from their lives, it was, I was sad. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. I mean, I just felt like a piece of shit. But I had hope. Because if I had gotten, because I believe that everybody, when they're born, are born the most pure, most spiritual beings on earth. Pure vessels. Endowed by God with everything that they need to be reasonably comfortable in life. And then, you know, the book talks about that pomp and that, you know, worship of other things. I mean, this world we live in now is designed to make you think if you have that, or if you have this, or you have her, you're gonna be all right. You know, you'll be something. And so when I got to the bottom of that page, the last page before the fourth, after the fourth step, it says that we begin to see how our resentment, or we begin to see how we wrong people, in so many ways, I'm paraphrasing, but we begin to see their terrible destructiveness. We begin to have a conscience of what we did to people. Like, and I never had that before. I never gave it a damn about anybody else. I never cared about anybody else. I never got that far. But when I had to list what I did to set the ball rolling, it was like, oh my God, I had to go back. I had to go back to the beginning. I had to go back to when the relationship was born and see how I manipulated that relationship. And when they pissed me off, that was the only thing I could remember. Right? So I lived in that stuff, and no wonder I drank. I mean, booze was my solution. Booze was my solution to the internal condition I was suffering from. And so then I, in the presence of God and with my sponsor, I did a fifth step. I've done a couple. I felt relief. You know, he said the first personality change happens when we do that fourth step and we see what we did to people. And we start having contrition. We start having, it's just our whole perception changes. And that's a miracle to me. That's, you know, they say that a spiritual experience kind of sounds like, like these sudden bursts of truth that get into your heart that rock your world. And for me to see, to have that perspective, just by doing the four-step inventory was amazing to me. And I had hope. And when I did the fifth step, it got better. I started to feel lighter and a little bit more confident in why I'm even here and living this life, why I'm even attempting to live another day. And John, when I got to 6 and 7, he says, we're going to do a little trial and error before you get, you know, embark on your amends. He says, we're going to get into a daily program, a daily formula, a strategy for success. And what we would pick out a couple defects. I would go out that day. I would do my best to not have, you know, a reoccurrence of it, or offend people, or want to run them off the road, or, you know, whatever it was. And I failed. I failed miserably in that first little bit. And Brian H., he told me, he says, the way it works is kind of like a three-phase thing. The first phase is where you choose your defects that you're going to make it. First of all, you make a decision, right? You make a decision that this is what it's going to be today. When I made that third set decision, when we make a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God, as we understood Him, there's got to be some display that you mean that. You know, if I want Him to be in my life and be the provider of my life, there's got to be a display by me and some action by me that kind of shows Him, if I want this relationship, that I really mean what I'm saying. It's not just reiterating the words. It's actually, Lord, this is what I'm going to do today to show you I mean what I said when I want you to be over my life, right? And so I would always have to do a third. I would always have to decide to do something. And then in the first phase, you go out and you do it anyway. You know, you hurt people. And then it's like, you know, pride and ego set in, and I don't want to go make amends, you know. But I didn't like the pain either. I didn't like that shit show that would happen to me as a result of doing something that I was so committed not to do. To God. You know what I mean? This is like a contractual thing I had with Him besides my sponsor. And, but in 24, 36 hours, I'd crawl my ass over to the person. I'd say, look, I was wrong. And all of a sudden, poof, it was gone. And I like that. So the second phase is where I still do it anyway again, but I don't wait as long, right? I don't wait 24 or 36 hours, because for me to drink is for me to die. And then Brian says, in the third phase, what will happen is that you'll be a little bit further down the line. Things will be starting to change. You'll start to implement this design into your heart, and you'll start to implement these principles into your heart. Rather than lying, you won't lie. Rather than embellishing, you won't embellish. Rather than stealing, you won't steal. Pat says, steal less. Anything to get me in the right direction. That is the right direction. So, and the third phase is amazing because, and mind you, this is all before I set forth on an amends on the first one. It was just for me. I had to, he says, Joe, when you go to make amends, they have to see somebody different. They don't give a shit what you're going to say. They don't want to hear what you got to say. But they're watching, right? So there's got to be some changing happening in my demeanor, my character, my come from, what's happening is it's going from here and it's coming down to here. And that third phase is like you go out and you go to do it, and then you pause, you take a deep breath, and you don't put any more garbage in that garbage can that I just got done emptying it step by, right? And John said, okay, it's time. And he put me on the worst one first. And he says, we're going to do the one you want that you hate, that you don't want to do the most. He says, because then the rest will be a lot easier. You know, in 6 and 7, I'll never forget, I was at a big book seminar, and Joe and Charlie were doing it. And they used to play music in between. I don't know if you remember that, but they played the song Healing. After Joe and Charlie covered 6 and 7, and I like lost it. I had to go find one of those back hallways, you know, in the Hilton or the Marriott, and I lost it. I mean, I bawled like a baby, And for the first time in my life, I thought, I might be able to stay stopped. I might be able to stay sober. For the first time in my life, things were looking different. Things were feeling different. People were responding to me differently. My chases were gone. The instincts, it's what's amazing through that process is that all of a sudden, I'm not chasing that stuff anymore. I don't know how, I do know how it happens, but to not have to chase money and chase girls and chase a job and, you know what I mean, just having to be important, having to be popular, having to be all that garbage that I was so addicted to for so long. I just didn't want to pretend anymore. And I wanted to think there was a place for me on this planet. You know, maybe there was a purpose. That's what was going on in 6 and 7, because I started to do these things because I wanted to do them. That's crazy. You know what I mean? I wanted to be a good person to other people. So when I got to Amends, and what was amazing is they saw and they experienced a different human being. It wasn't that calculated fraud, imposter. It wasn't that thief or that liar. It was somebody that came and said, look, man, I was wrong. It's like my mother. I stole her heirloom wedding ring that she got from her grandma. My mom lived till 99. And it broke her heart. I stole her ring, I pawned it, and I went and smoked crack. Like a freaking dirtbag would. And you talk about the hurt. If I'd have gone into my mother and sat down with her and said, Mom, look, I'm really sorry about that ring. You know, I don't know how I'm going to make it up to you, but, you know, maybe I can send you some money or something. It would have been like putting another nail in her heart. Right? But the violation, the breach of trust, the bond between a mother and a son, I shattered her, man. And she did nothing but love me and help me every single time I needed it. And when I made that amends, it was like, I told her, I said, she wanted to stop me. She didn't want me to say that. Oh, Mom, I need to say this. I hurt you deeply. And, you know, if you can find it in your heart, perhaps down the road, not now, perhaps you might want to forgive me. But I wouldn't forgive me for that. If anybody else had done it to my mother, I'd have shot him. So something happened through that phase where I started to feel like I was on different footing, and I was like in it, man. I was falling head over heels in love with this thing, with AA, with God. And step 10 is nothing but 4 through 9 all the time, right? But you got to make a decision to do that. Right? So three, decide. And whatever I'm doing, whether it's working on trash mouth or working on whatever I'm working on, I'm making a third step decision to work on that and display to him that I really want him in my life. Whatever it is. Right? And inventory is easy. I mean, listen, it's not hard to figure out who pissed me off. I'm a master detecting that shit. You know what I mean? I'm really good at that. Before they even knew it, as a matter of fact. But I got to be really on my toes, and I got to have an inner circle. I got to have a group of friends that I give permission to that will call me on my garbage. If they, you know, and John says, you need to tell the people that you trust, people that you're growing up with, you need to tell them that they have full permission to call you out. Because you're going to give them your vision. That you want to become an integrous, responsible, accountable man of God. That's what you want to become. Every time you're deviating from that path, they're going to call you out. because they know if I allow them to call me out, they're gonna, it's gonna reciprocate. It's just gonna happen that way. And amazing things have happened, man. I'm telling you, I'm a believer. I'm a very grateful and amazed believer. God has, it just boggles my mind. It boggles my mind that God would bestow and give Bill that divine input to write this book that is just, it's a masterpiece. I just, you know, every time I read it, every time we study it, every time I talk about it, it's like, I can't believe this. You know, it's from a stock manipulator. So, if I'm implementing this design, which Bill talked about a few times, he says, this is a design for living that really works. Well, the implementation is simple. It's the spiritual principles, which are the essence of each step. Right? Honestly. Open my faith. Courage. I never had integrity. I never knew what it was like to feel the benefit of being responsible. I never knew the benefit of being accountable. I never knew the benefit of being honest. I never knew the benefit of any of that stuff. Honor? What's that? I told John, I said, I want to know what it feels like to be that guy. I want to know what it feels like to be trusted. That somebody can rely on me to show up at 3 o'clock in the morning at the airport if they're coming in that time. Instead of being a no-show and another broken promise. And little by slowly, John put all these ingredients in play. It wasn't just the steps. It was that, dude, you're going to get up and you're going to have a routine. You're not going to sleep in. You're going to be on time. You're going to tell the truth, right? You're going to keep your word, Joe. When you make an agreement with somebody, you keep it. And God, it was just pounded into me. So the ingredients of responsibility, accountability, discipline, commitment, obedience, all that stuff. It may not be written in the book, but it's all a byproduct of what we do here. Because if I'm not being that, what kind of a display am I giving off? What kind of a representative am I? You know, we're the only people that have been blessed with being able to save lives. It amazes me. And I've just been in that growing in effectiveness and understanding. You know, that's where I'm at right now. I'm parked there and I just, you know, I seek. I go outside the rooms of AA. I go to church. I read the Bible. I am constantly using sources of empowerment and enlightenment just to grow my reality, grow my understanding. Why not? You know? It's like, you know, it's third step decision. Why would I be willing to turn my will and my life over to the care of God? Well, you're dying. Right? Door number one. Live beyond your wildest dream. Live a life that wasn't supposed to happen. And door number two, die. There's no door number three, guys. You know that. We don't have options here. Live or die. And if I'm still stuck on me and selfishness and, you know, wanting to have it my way, John would say this: go out and finish the frickin' job, Joe. You're not done. Can't help them up, help them down. Maybe they'll get up quicker. Thanks, guys.